Da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da. Here's to the one who wears the D. Three-peat, baby. We have a championship of the Drake Basketball Podcast on our hands. To tell you how it went down, we go live to St. Louis to our own Dolph Pulliam.
The Drake Bulldogs joined Southern Illinois as the only school to win three straight MVC tournaments with a 63-48 win over the Bradley Braves in the finals of the Missouri Valley Conference tournament here in St. Louis. Coach Ben McCollum becomes the ninth first-year MVC basketball coach to win in his first appearance at the MVC tournament. Drake got off to a slow start in the first half, allowing Bradley to get some very easy baskets. And then the Bulldogs turned up their defense and limited Bradley in scoring, thus going into the dressing room at halftime with a 31-27 lead. The Bulldogs came out of the dressing room in the second half and just simply dominated the Bradley Braves, thus winning the Missouri Valley Conference Championship by a 63-48 point margin. Bennett Sturts led all scorers for the Bulldogs with 24 points, 4 rebounds, 4 assists in 39 minutes of play. Tavian Banks added 13 points, 9 rebounds, and 2 assists. Here's the all-tournament team. It included Bennett Sturts as the Doug Elgin Most Valuable Player. Tavian Banks makes that team as well for the Bulldogs. Then it's Darius Hanna from Bradley, Duke Dean from Bradley, and Ali Wright from Valparaiso. For the Drake Basketball Podcast, this is Dolph Pulliam at the Missouri Valley Conference Tournament in St. Louis. And I can only say, go Bulldogs.
From the legendary Dolph to another legendary performance for the Bulldogs, three-time MVC Conference Tournament champions. What a performance by Drake. Just incredibly impressed by the defensive intensity and attention to detail. Once again, ending Bradley's season. This is now the third straight year that Drake has eliminated Bradley and make that 7 out of 9 for those of you counting at home. Tucker, I feel like we have to start right from the jump because we have to really enjoy and savor every moment of the game that led to a 63-48 victory for Drake.
Listen, before we dive into the technicalities of this game and really break down the game plan in itself, I have a mailbag that I was saving for later, but since you brought up the fact that Drake has ended Bradley's season so many seasons in a row now, I feel like this particular question needs to be addressed right off the bat. It is, how should Bradley fans hate listening to the podcast deal with losing to Drake 3 years in a row and having it stuck in their minds the entire offseason as the Bulldogs live rent-free in their heads?
If people think that we're just being petty or hateful for no reason, like, you don't understand how Bradley fans are in real life and on Twitter. Like, I just think, Tucker, if I had a conference rival that has been beating up on me for 3 years now, I would be going into games saying, like, look, man, we need a full effort. We need 40 minutes of greatness. Like, we got to get over the hump. Like, Drake's a great team. Instead, all they do is talk about how they run the Valley and how, you know, they're the best team in the conference. And it's like, I don't understand where that energy comes from. But shout out to Drake and shout out to Coach McCollum, because every single year they've approached this tournament and this matchup with Bradley with the right mindset. And that's just, hey, it's going to be a battle. We got to grind it out. Trust the game plan. And when you have the best coach in the conference and the best player in the conference, that's a pretty good duo to start with.
Absolutely. And the best player in the conference came to play today. Bennett Sturts was playing like the Larry Bird player of the year that he is. As you heard Dolph say, Bennett with 24 points, 7 for 13 from the field, 5 for 7 from 3. And, you know, I don't think Coach McCollum needs to listen to the DBP, but it's almost like he did, because the last time we played Bradley, the one thing that we talked about was how we'd really like to see them punish Brian Wardle for playing Duke Dean. And how we thought that Bennett could have a field day offensively against him, because they would have Duke Dean match up on Bennett, and we're like, you got to punish him for that. If they're going to try to put a 5'8", generously speaking, guard on your 6'4 player of the year, make him pay. And that's what Bennett did all day long today. He kept pulling up, and he just had clear looks at the hoop every time and just knocked it down from deep, took him to the rim, dished. Like, he was a man possessed, a one-man wrecking crew, and it was a joy to watch as a Bulldog fan.
It absolutely was, and it really felt like a culmination of a terrific season, a culmination of just silencing the doubters, right? Drake came into the season having lost a great coach in Darren DeBries, having lost their entire roster. And I would say they had the right mindset from day one, and that was all Coach McCollum. He came in and he said, we're going to play championship level defense, we're going to have championship level approach and mindset, and they lived it. And it really was just such a joy to watch the Bulldogs rise to the occasion like they did on Sunday. And as you said, I mean, Bennett once again outstanding, and we can laugh about it now because we won the game and we beat Bradley, but shout out to Brian Wardle. Like, standing ovation for thinking that Duke Dean could stick with Bennett Sturts. Like, it worked in Des Moines just because Bennett had an off day. We all knew it was a fluke. So shout out to him for not adjusting. I'll have to go back and look at every three that he hit, but I'm fairly certain three or four of them were on Duke Dean and the other one was on Jaquan Johnson, who's also really small. So again, you know, great job by Drake exploiting that matchup from Bennett. But should we start from the first half? Because I got to say, it was the 13-minute mark, Tucker, and Bradley had not missed a shot. There were six from six, and the score was 12-12. And I was like, hold up. Bradley just had the absolute dream start to this game. They have not missed a shot, and the score is tied. And I didn't want to get ahead of myself, but I was like, okay, we're a terrific defensive team. They're going to regress back to the mean. And the one thing that I was happy about, yeah, they were getting easy looks inside, but they weren't letting them shoot threes. Like, they were definitely hedging the shit out of those screens and just trapping and then having the activity to get back. And yeah, what did you see? What were your initial thoughts as Bradley got off to a good start offensively?
Bradley did a good job of getting it inside to Darius Hanna. Finished at the rim early on, but Drake's defense in this game was incredible. And talking to someone after the game, it was like, as the game went on, Drake just continued to tighten the screws on Bradley. It just felt like Bulldogs were everywhere. Mm-hmm. Anytime Bradley tried to drive, there were white jerseys surrounding them, hands reaching in, knocking the ball away. Tip drill constantly every possession. I can't count how many passes and shots were tipped. You know, it's just crazy how active the Bulldogs are with their hands and how well they help. So just a defensive clinic put on by Drake today. Yeah,
absolutely. And it's a lot easier to just say a sentence like that, like Drake put on a clinic. And like, I hope people understand like how hard it is and the attention to detail and the work and effort to you hedge that screen, you communicate, get back, don't let them get the ball inside. And like you said, it really was a cumulative effect of as the game dragged on. Look, Bradley's ball handlers are short. Like, this is a fact. And the more the game went on with Jaquan Johnson and Duke Dean, like, they would try to turn the corner on that screen and just couldn't. And then they couldn't get the ball inside quick on the rotation because Drake is long and active. And it just kept going and going. And I also want to say, definitely felt like a huge turning point at the end of the first half. Drake's up 29-27. Duke Dean pulls up for one of his patented late shot clock jumpers. Isaiah Jackson does a terrific job getting back into the action, blocks the shot, leaks out, and smartly floats the ball in right before the buzzer to give Drake a 4-point lead.
Dude, that was a tough finger roll too. Mm-hmm. I mean, That was probably like he probably took off from 5 feet out. And
No,
with the clock running down, like that's a lot of pressure.
it was not an easy shot at all for Isaiah. So just the presence of mind of, okay, time is running out. I'm not going to be able to get all the way to the rim. I got to just like finger roll 4 feet away from the basket. It was a clutch shot. And Bradley never got closer than 4 points the rest of the way, which again, outstanding work from Drake. I mean, how many times do you see in a game, like the other team is always going to have a run, right? But they just kept Bradley at bay. At one point, they held them scoreless for a 9 minute stretch. Like, unbelievable. Like, 4 minutes to close the first half, then the first 5 minutes in the second half to build a 10-point lead. And again, it still felt like Bradley still has a run, can't take anything for granted. This is us talking after having beaten Bradley 6 out of 8 coming into the game, and we still respect the rival or the opponent to say, hey, they can still come back. They still have a run in them. And Tucker, they finally cut it to 46-41. And then a little bit of chaos ensued. And I think nobody knew what was going on because even the announcers were confused and the refs didn't do a great job of explaining it. So, what was your reaction when it was 48-41? Bradley's on a little bit of a run. And then there's a foul call from Cam on Darius Hannah.
I was perplexed because Kevin Harlan, the way he was explaining it on TV, made it sound like he thought that the refs were looking at potentially calling a T on Cam for throwing an elbow on the rebound. And then I saw Randy Heimerman on the sidelines and I was freaking out because I was like, oh my God, we're definitely getting a T call then. And so with Kevin framing it that way, no offense, Kevin, I love you, like big fan. So with him framing it that way, and then when Kip Kissinger, the official, went up and announced that they were looking at foul on number one and White, which he was talking at the time about his foul on Darius Hannah, but I thought he was talking about the elbow afterward. I was like, are you kidding me? What are you talking about? And in the meantime, he was actually talking about Duke Dean after the play going up and shoving Cam and picking up a technical for that. So yeah, it was a wild little flurry of activity there.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, I think every Drake fan, again, because of Kevin Harlan's reaction and then Kissinger's explanation, because if you go back and re-listen to what he said, he kind of botches the explanation. So every Drake fan, I think, was thinking they just called a technical on Cam and it's going to be four free throws and Bradley gets the ball in a 7-point game. And it ended up backfiring. Like, Bradley was trying to be smart and complain, like, oh, Cam pushed him. And it ends up backfiring because instead, call a technical on Duke Dean, foul stance on Cam. Then Darius Hannah, who's not a stellar free throw shooter, misses the two free throws. And then Drake gets to pick our best free throw shooter. Mitch drains the two free throws. And then on top of that, Drake gets the ball because it's a T on Duke Dean. And then Bennett comes back and hits a backbreaker three over Jaquan Johnson to take a 12-point lead.
Yeah, wild stretch there. Just very, very confusing. I went to being outraged to like, oh, nice, real quick.
Right. And the irony of all this is that I don't think it was a foul on anyone or a technical on anyone. Cam didn't foul Darius Hannah, that gets a soft call, and there shouldn't have been anything after that. But again, Bradley wanted to be slick and it ended up backfiring. And then after that, it was a 12-point game. And then we got to talk about the exclamation point on the win, which is Bennett, with the leak out dunk followed by the step back three over Duke Dean to go up 18. And at that point, it finally felt like, okay, unless we're going to have a UNI type of collapse, Drake's going to pull this out and finally just put it to rest that Drake is the best team in the conference this year. Once again, I should say.
Dude, that dunk, shout out to Devin Growinkle photographer who does a lot of Drake stuff. He took the photograph of the tournament. It's got Bennett hanging on the rim, Darius Hannah in disarray down below, Tavion just looking up, ready to catch him if he falls, and the Drake faithful going wild in the background. Great, great photo, Devin. Can't say enough about that. Might have to make that my new cover photo. We'll see.
Beautiful photo.
Yeah.
Yeah. When there's a couple of times where Cam had a really nice dunk on the baseline, and I scream, "It's Cam Maniao season!" And then definitely at the end, I was thinking, "It's Bennett season!" You know, shout out to Bradley. What a fan base! Shout out to Bradley.
Yeah, clearly, Darius Hannah was not ready for Hannah season to be over with the way he picked up that flagrant foul on Cam toward the end there. That was pretty dirty, winding up and trying to take him out on a layup attempt, but Bradley's going to do what Bradley's going to do, and their season ends at Drake's hands in Arch Madness, as is tradition.
Again, if I was in their position, Tucker, I would go into these games just humble, like, man, we have to play a perfect game to beat Drake, and instead it's just like the opposite type energy. So, look, it was...
You wouldn't go in guaranteeing double-digit wins?
No, I would not go in guaranteeing a 10-plus win against a team who has not lost the game by more than, like, 7 points this season. So definitely would not do that. A couple stats, too, that we haven't touched on. Drake destroyed Bradley on the boards, 32-19, 11-3 on the offensive glass. So it was just one and done every time for Bradley and for Drake. It was the opposite. It was like time to feast. There was a couple times that Tavion and Cam got called for fouls because the refs were like, I mean, if they've gotten like four straight rebounds, like one of them has to be a foul, right? Even though they were just completely outworking Bradley. And you mentioned the turnovers, only 10-9 advantage for Drake, but the points off turnovers, 11-2. So again, when Bradley was turning the ball over, Drake was turning it into points. And we've talked about Cam a lot this season and how we need him to be at our peak. And I thought once again, his activity, his athleticism really came through today for Drake.
Yeah, Cam came up huge, especially with Daniel getting into some foul trouble and only being able to log 20 minutes today. Cam had to shoulder the load playing big in this game. Saw him and Tavion get a lot of action on the floor together today. And I actually thought that worked out really well against Bradley. Their giant, what's their giant's name?
Jonovich.
Yeah. He wasn't nearly as effective at clogging things up as he was in the last matchup.
No, and subtle adjustments there, and maybe the Abreu foul trouble kind of forced McCollum's hand, but I'm with you. Tavion and Cam at the same time really worked for Drake. And as far as adjustments, I mean, another thing that I thought Drake did really well, you know how Bradley kept kind of putting all of the attention on one side of the floor on Bennett? There were multiple times where they would kind of overload the corner that Bennett was in, and then have like Tavion completely isolated on the other side of the court, or get Cam going downhill in the middle. So really good job there. Just little wrinkles from McCollum as, okay, if you're going to shift your entire defense onto Bennett, then let me put all of the attention on one side. And then on the other side, let me find the mismatch and just attack it. Little things there that also help. And Tavion 13-9 on the game. But I really think just defensively, I mean, again, I know we're repeating ourselves, but it just has to be said. I mean, Bradley is a team that scores at a pretty good clip. You've heard it all season long, you know, best 3-point shooting team in the country percentage wise. And Drake held them to 5 out of 20. And I really felt like they just blew everything up that Bradley wanted to do. They did not let them shoot comfortable threes. They did not let Zeke Montgomery get to his little, you know, mid-range game inside. And even Jonovich, like you said, like he had a great tournament for Bradley, and they just made him not efficient. You know, they just pounded him inside and put him in bad situations defensively. Darius Hanna, truthfully, was the only one that had a great game for Bradley with 19 points. But other than that, they just really got them off their game and just put on a defensive masterclass. I mean, just so fun to watch. I mean, it was so fun to watch.
Yeah, and they pointed this out on the broadcast, but Ben McCollum did have Bennett play off the ball a little bit more today than he usually does. Kel Combs logged a lot of minutes for the Bulldogs, 18, and Isaiah Jackson got 14. But for someone who plays every minute of every game and usually has the ball in his hands for 95% of the time, for Bennett, by Bennett's standards, he didn't have the ball as much as he usually does. So it was kind of interesting to see him play off the ball a little bit more, but he certainly had just as much of an impact.
Right. And there were a couple instances where just if Kale's bringing the ball or Isaiah's bringing up the ball, you know, just a cut inside and then, you know, tosses it to Cam or just different things that Bennett was able to do. He was effective. And once again, man, I was like so happy when Isaiah Jackson hit that corner three because, again,
huge. I was huge.
It was huge. At the moment, I think Drake was up 8 and he pushed the lead to 11. And again, you look at his box score, 14 minutes, 2 of 2, 5 points, but both of his buckets, again, closing out the first half and then getting that key three. And again, we said it, just the ability to not be afraid to shoot the ball. Okay. And like, he showed that once again, like, okay, shot clock running down, swing it to me, you know, splash. So super happy for Isaiah. This dude competes so hard defensively. And when he needs to step up, he has. I was so happy for him in that moment.
Winners win.
Winners win. And that's definitely something that has to be said about Drake's roster, about Ben McCollum. This is a group of guys that are used to winning. Shout out to Nate Ferguson, because it dawned on me as this weekend that he's been at Drake for 6 years. You know, he got the red shirt, he had the extra COVID year, but all 5 years that he's played for Drake, you know, aside from the red shirt, he's been in the MVC championship game. So this is really Nate Ferguson day. He's used to being playing Sundays for the Bulldogs, and now the third straight MVC title for Drake.
Yeah, we got to get Nate on staff next year or something, because clearly, like, Drake can't fail when he's a part of the team.
No, I mean, the guy is money. I mean, has to be on the staff for Drake to continue to make runs in Arch Madness. Any parting shots or anything that you would say about Bradley's season? Obviously picked first to win the Valley, Duke Dean preseason player of the year, and then to come up short once again against Drake.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's pretty much your typical Bradley season. Talked junk all year long, talked about how they are going to boat race Drake throughout the year, how their players were all better than Drake's, how they are going to win the conference. They proceeded to lose the conference, proceeded to lose to Drake in Arch Madness, and now maybe they'll play in the CBI if they're lucky. I don't know. You know, just the usual Bradley season. And now I assume we'll hear from them sometime when they crawl out of the shadows of college basketball next November.
Yeah, it's good. We don't have to worry about Bradley for another year. And I'm sure they'll be extremely worried about us, as they typically are. We worry about them when they're the next game on the schedule. But we seem to live rent-free in their heads. Tucker, any initial thoughts on seeding for the Bulldogs for the NCAA tournament? And for the record, because we do need to get this on record, Drake was getting in as an at-large regardless, okay? Like, their resume was so deserving, and Drake still had the focus to come out and said, nope, we're just still going to claim this championship and just make it, leave no doubt.
Yeah, ignore Jerry Palm, ignore Joe Lenardi. If you look at Bracket Matrix, which ranks the accuracy of all the bracketologists at the end of the year after all the results have been tallied, and looks at how many teams they got right and choosing the field, those guys are always ranked very near dead last. And it's because they're employed by the networks that have a vested interest in getting these Power 5 teams in. So they make sure they choose all these Power 5 teams to be a part of the bracket to promote that particular narrative. And the fact that neither of them even had Drake listed in the last four out is just pure propaganda. So ignore that. The guys who know what they're talking about, like T3 Bracketology, had Drake firmly in the tournament for making the Arch Madness Championship. And a lot of them, honestly, had Drake in after winning their first round matchup against Southern Illinois. But in terms of seeding, I think we're probably looking at a 10 or 11 seed as it stands now. If there are a lot of bubble teams that get hot late, we'll probably drop down to an 11. I'd like to see us be a 10. When we were talking with T3, he mentioned, and it's something I agree with, that he doesn't really see much advantage over being an 8-9 versus a 10, because then you see the one seed a lot sooner, obviously, if you're trying to make a run, if you're an 8-9. So I vote we go 10.
Was good to me, and you're exactly right. I did have to run it by our friend T3 Bracketology, and I asked him for some initial thoughts on what Drake's current seed line would be, and he was right there with you. You know, in his opinion, if we get, for whatever reason, just an inordinate amount of bit stealers or something like that, Drake will be an 11. If it's a standard year where you get a couple bit stealers here or there, then Drake's going to be a 10. We'll see how it plays out, but 10 or 11 is where things are at for Drake.
Hey, by the way, we're 30-3.
30 and 3.
Isn't that a hilarious record?
Most wins in school history, first time winning the regular season and conference title since 2008. But yeah, I mean, just unbelievable stuff. I don't know. I don't know if we can overstate that enough.
The Ben McCollum effect, folks. And you know what? Not just the Ben McCollum effect. Darren DeVries heads for Appalachia, and Brian Harden and Marty Martin say, eh, okay, fine, have fun. We're going to go ahead and set the record for school wins with the next guy.
I mean, it really is unbelievable. You know, Darren DeVries was a terrific coach for Drake. He leaves, he takes all our roster. We have literally nothing. The cupboard is completely empty except Mr. Championship Nate Ferguson and my guy Andrew Aliah. And Ben McCollum says, "Don't worry, guys, we're gonna build this from the ground up. I got some guys from Northwest Missouri State that are a bunch of dogs. And let me fill in the roster here and there. And we're not going to drop off. The standard is the standard. We're going to continue to be successful. And we're going to do it by having just a completely methodical approach to the game of basketball." And then Drake went out and delivered a perfect non-conference season, and then a 17-3 regular season, followed by another Arch Madness title. And what's funny, Tucker, is that game against Bradley was, what, 3 weeks ago, I think, when they lost in Des Moines. And in that moment, you know, I said in the podcast, we still haven't won anything. You know, we still haven't secured the at-large. We haven't secured the regular season title. Who knows what happens in Arch Madness? And then Drake followed that up by just checking the boxes on all of that.
So, listeners, it's funny. Eduardo and I are a bit superstitious and we try not to jinx. And also because we know how deeply Brian Wardle dives into social media trying to find ambition for his team, we try not to provide anything too juicy for them. But following that team, I told Eduardo, I was like, honestly, it's probably for the best because now this just falls into the pattern. Split the regular season series with Bradley, and we'll beat them in St. Louis, which is
Right.
why we had our pod the other day and leading up to the tournament. And Eduardo was like, Tucker, who do you want to see in St. Louis? And I was like, I think you know. We don't want to say because we didn't want to say we want Bradley because we aren't Bradley fans, but it's like, I like our chances.
Yeah, and again, we like our chances because we've had good coaches, good players, and guys who take it one game at a time. It's not meant to be a disrespect to Bradley, but again, for whatever reason, they just do not have the same mindset. And can we just get, we've been really good. We're, you know, about 25, 30 minutes into this podcast. Can we just get one joke on Brian Wardle's Dorothy shoes? And I was just thinking, like,
Wicked Witch of the West shoes?
yes, Like, I was just picturing him, like, how dumb must he feel after the game, like, going down to take off his red shoes? Like, God, why did I wear these?
Do you think he was just clicking his heels together and thinking, there's no place like Peoria? There's no place like Peoria.
I mean, those shoes are a look, man. I gotta say, the red jacket is less weird than the sparkly red shoes. But
Oh,
that's it. We can't give him more content for next year because he's already compiling, okay, I
yeah.
gotta get my team to believe that nobody believes in us again.
Brian, just again, thank you for tuning in. We appreciate you being a listener. I think your shoes are really nice. Don't listen to Eduardo. I think you pull them off really well.
Oh man.
Prove
Dude,
them.
we're prove them. We're going to the NCAA tournament for the fourth time in 5 years. Just unbelievable stuff.
Yeah,
Unbelievable.
it's great, man. It's great. I can't wait to see where we end up.
I know. And we'll be patiently watching how everything plays out, and obviously we'll have some good coverage of what comes next for Drake. I also wanted to point this out, Tucker. I don't know if you got me anything. This is actually our 50th episode all time. So did you get me anything? I mean, it's a big milestone.
Yeah, I actually got a DBP 50 tattooed inside my right bicep.
There you go. There you go. It also has to be said that we also have the Nate Ferguson effect because Drake has won the conference tournament every year that we've started podcasting. So I guess this can never stop.
Yeah, in terms of streaks, this actually breaks one for me, which I'm happy to have it broken, but it was a fun fact. Leading up to this, I had been at every Drake men's Arch Madness championship that they had ever won. And so this is the first one that I've missed.
Hey, a historic team can reverse historic streaks, and nobody can appreciate superstition like Ben McCollum. So it's fitting that it had to happen with Ben McCollum at the helm. And anything else you got?
Yeah, I do. I have another mailbag question. Top three moments for the DBP leadership, which I assume is us. I mean, Dolph is obviously at the top of the pyramid, but since he's not on live right now to answer, we'll have to be us. Top three moments for DBP leadership at Arch Madness.
Good question. Should we start with number three first, work our way backwards?
Yeah, let's do it.
Can we go number three, just like a collection of just the Isaiah Howard breakout? Is that fair, like as a moment?
I mean, it's not the definition of a moment, but if you want to just be really loose with language and have words lose their meaning, Eduardo, by all means, just throw your Drake journalism degree to the side.
Fine, then pick one of the threes that he hit.
No. I think that's good, the Isaiah Howard breakout game.
Where are you going for number two?
I will go with the Connor Enright three in last year's championship game against Indiana State.
Oh, timeout. I thought we were doing like top three of this Arch Madness, not top three like all time or top three in the last few years for
Well,
Drake.
I think we're doing all time.
Okay. Well, this changes everything.
Okay.
The Connor Enright three is iconic against Indiana State in last year's championship.
Okay, let's each have our own three. Number three for me is Connor Enright, three from the wing against Indiana State in the championship.
Okay. That's fair. That's fair. I'll go number three. The man, Tucker had some good moments, dude. Tucker DeVries had some good moments. Not Tucker Basie.
I had some good ones too, though.
You do have some good moments too in the last few years. I'll go the Tucker DeVries transition three against Bradley, where I think that put us up like 20 in the championship game 2 years ago. Like, that's when I think about the Bradley game from 2 years ago, I just think of like the Tucker flurry and this like avalanche that just like never stopped. So you can kind of probably pick like any particular play in that, but that's the one that comes to mind for me.
Okay. My number two moment will be Darnell Brody banking three against Bradley championship game.
Also a fun one.
I think that one just had so much joy in it, and having all the fans chanting Brody's name as he high-stepped down the court. And it was another one of those moments against our, you know, favorite Valley fan base. After listening to another full year of trash talking and then just getting to see Brody raining threes while we ran away with the game. That was a fun one.
I'll stick with Connor for number two, the Connor three. So you got Connor three, the Darnell bank. I got the Tucker flurry and then the Connor shot against Indiana State. Where are you going, number one?
Number one would be my
first
championship that I was at in person, 2008. It's hard to have just one moment from that game. Actually, my moment was when I was sitting in the stands after the game. Bulldogs had just won by, I think, 30-plus against Illinois State. I was just sitting there, confetti pouring down around me, and lady was sweeping the confetti out of the aisle, and I was just still sitting there with a smile on my face, and she said, "Just sitting there enjoying the moment, honey." And I was like, "Yeah." She's like, "All right, you have a good time."
That's a good one. I can't relate to that because I started following Drake really the following year when I went to school at Drake. So I can't claim a moment from the 2008 run. Like, I remember Drake being good that season as a kid in Mexico that would just follow college basketball, but I can't claim a particular moment.
Yeah, well, I think, those are our top three. Thank you.
Wait. I didn't give you my number one. I gave you my three and two.
Just give me what was not your number one. Yeah, yeah. Sorry.
I can't claim 08. So I'll go for me. I'm cheating with this because I keep picking sequences. So I'll just go the Bennett three to ice it today against Bradley. I mean, I feel like that's like a perfect encapsulation of the season. Drake putting it on, playing really good defense, taking advantage of a mismatch, and then what do we see to end it again? A Bennett step back three to just ice the game. It's recency bias, I know, but that sequence with the dunk and the three, I mean, chef's kiss. It was outstanding.
And Ben and team, if you're listening, don't think that I am not choosing moments from this run because I hold any favoritism for past teams. It is strictly because I could not make this year's tournament, so I didn't feel right about choosing from it because I wasn't actually there. So not to worry, I will be at this year's NCAA tournament, so I will definitely be adding favorite moments for Drake NCAA tournaments to my all-time list once y'all go on your run.
Honorable mention to a couple moments against Missouri State, the Joe Yesufu lay-in to win it when we made the tournament, because that was really like, we needed that game. We were reeling with injuries so bad, and I think we all felt like we're probably not going to beat Loyola because we're really shorthanded, so we had to have it to get to the tournament. And Yesufu split the defense with the pretty layup back in, that would have been, what, 2021? And then you also can't forget the following year, Tucker's free throws against Missouri State also felt like a very, like, signature moment for the Drake run of this these last 6-7 years.
Yeah, Isaiah Mosley sliding over to try to take the charge and failing. Yeah. But that's, you know, it's classic Southwest Missouri State, Conference USA.
had to get it in there. One more joke, one more parting shot. It's okay. It's not like we bring up, you know, you and I's collapse or anything embarrassing about Valley teams ever again.
Hey, what are we here for if not for that?
All right, man.
All right. Listeners, we'll be in touch. Obviously, we're going to be waiting with bated breath until Selection Sunday, so we can see where the Bulldogs are going and who we're matched up with. Obviously, we'll be giving you all the latest breakdowns on our opponent, watching game tape, seeing exactly what we have to deal with and what we can expect. So until then, go Dawgs.
Go Dawgs.